This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. Welcome to the Out of Bounds podcast. My name is Adam Jabber, and I am your host. We have another awesome episode for you today. We have Mally Noyes and Lonnie Bruntz on the show. I hope I did not butcher either of their last names, but they're both on the show, and they just put out a video of them completing and skiing the Whirl, which is the Wasatch Ultimate Ridge Link Up. And there's a video online that you can check out as well, which I would highly recommend you do because we chat quite a bit about it. We also chat a bit about backcountry skiing, getting into it, what their experience was like in the backcountry, how they kind of figured out how to navigate it on their own, and what guidance they received along the way, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. I really enjoyed chatting with these ladies. Like, this is like a really, really cool thing that they did. And I think the video is put together really well as well. So definitely worth checking out. You can get it on the Solomon TV YouTube channel, which always has good content, but especially this time. The video is called specifically The Whirl, and they spent 4 days and 3 nights over the course of 58 kilometers ski touring the Wasatch. So definitely worth checking out. Even if you're not super interested in the YouTube aspect of it, this conversation I think will be really helpful to a lot of people. And I really, really enjoyed having it. I'm glad we got to do it. So before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Pearl Wax. If you're not familiar with Pearl, Pearl makes all kinds of different waxes, just like any other wax company, except they don't use any fluoros, they don't use any toxic chemicals, and they always say, like, no hype. Like, it's basically like, this is wax. It's fast. It's awesome. It works really well. They are a supporter of 1% for the planet. So you can kind of see where this is going. Like, they are a very environmentally conscious company. They're based out of Colorado, and they are my absolute favorite to work with. Like, they've been awesome for me in every way. And I'm really happy that they decided to come on board again. You can save 20% off on your first purchase of a Pearl product at pearlwax.com, using promo code Out of Bounds. Highly recommend you do that. Check out their website. I will post all the stuff in the show notes. I hope you guys get yourself some wax because the season is coming fast and I'm excited. So if you couldn't tell already, obviously, give us a follow on Instagram. It's just at Out of Podcast. Same thing on all social media. Twitter seems to be more popular lately. There's a YouTube, but we don't really put that much on it, although I will be weighing out some skis and kind of talking gear over the next couple weeks, so stay tuned for that as well. And also, follow these ladies on social media as well. I will link both of them in the show notes below. So without further ado, Lonnie and Mally. Guys, tell everybody who you are and a little bit about yourselves. I don't know who wants to go first. I mean, this part will be hard.
Yeah. Do you want to go first, Lonnie?
You've been nailing it.
Okay. So I'm Mally Noyes, and I grew up as a Nordic ski racer from Sun Valley, Idaho. I raced Nordic in college at Middlebury and then transferring to the University of Utah. And now I am a professional free ride skier for Solomon and a trail runner.
Cool.
And Lonnie? I'm Lonnie Bruntz, and I am from Crested Butte, Colorado. I originally grew up in Vail, also as a Nordic skier, and then kind of diverted and moved away from skiing for many years and got back into it through the backcountry, and now work as a guide based in, again, Crested Butte. I work for Irwin Guides.
Cool. How did you guys meet?
We always knew each other through racing in high school, Colorado and Idaho, both being pretty close, and like going to training camps and stuff in the summer. And then we were also at Middlebury together, both on the ski team and in class together, which I think solidified more of our friendship just as we had gotten more mature and like actually on a team together. And then we reconnected again after college. We both became river guides in Stanley, Idaho, working for different companies. So we didn't really see each other, but we were both there at the same time. And we went on a hut trip in the Sawtooths. And I think that's like really where we reconnected now that we were both like sort of done with Nordic skiing and into backcountry skiing.
What made you guys switch from Nordic to backcountry skiing? Because there's a lot of similarities, right? Like, I think the willingness to suffer is definitely one of them. But what was that switch? Like, what made you guys, because you both did it, I guess, separately, and the transition was made, but like, what made you do it?
For me, I was pretty burnt out from Nordic racing. And so after my final collegiate race, I kind of hung the skis up for what ended up being a few years. And it was really like the terrain and the wildness of the mountains that piqued my interest in backcountry skiing. So I really wanted to find a way to access where I was living at the time. It was Stanley, Idaho, and the Sawtooths were just so stunning. And so I wanted to get into the sport to be able to go into the mountains. And like you mentioned, I was also really drawn to the fact that it had that more physical component as well, getting to skin up things. Because what I found early on was that no matter what the conditions were, unless it's terrible breaker crust, it's pretty tough to have the best day in those conditions. But even if it wasn't, you know, epic powder, it was just so enjoyable having this new mode to access the mountains and walk around and kind of push yourself.
Was there anything for you guys that was hard to get used to transitionally, like going from Nordic to backcountry skiing? Because like right now there's a huge boom in backcountry skiing, and there has been for a few years, but this year in particular, like, people are really looking for a way to kind of get out there and not have to be reliant on a chairlift. They just want to go outside. I mean, we saw it in bike where everybody was trying to get outside, and trail running too, actually, where like everybody was trying to just get outside and get some fresh air. The same story is kind of happening, like, or setting up to happen this season, where like, you know, people want to go skiing, like regular skiing, but people are starting to explore more in the backcountry. Was there anything that was weird for you guys going and doing that sort of stuff more?
Well, I feel like I progressed slowly over a bunch of years into more and more backcountry skiing, where the fitness wasn't an issue. That might be an issue for more people, but it was like learning all the snow safety and avalanche safety was like a much bigger step. And I think a very important step, that is like totally separate from athleticism and a desire to explore, and that responsibility, which I think is really fun. Another piece of stuff to learn.
Yeah. And I would agree. I think it wasn't necessarily something weird about it, but it's just a barrier to entry. I think it's similar to climbing, especially as you try to pick up trad climbing. It's one of those sports that in my mind, you really need a mentor to get into it or to really be able to seek out that education. Because it's one thing to go out and just get the experience and try to learn from that. But to me, I really relied heavily on getting as much education and sought as much mentorship as I could. And I continue to, just because there is so much to learn to more safely move through the mountains backcountry skiing.
Yeah, I think it'll be good for people to hear that sort of thing, because everybody's repeating it right now. Everybody's like, learn, get educated, you know, go out there, get the information, like kind of repeating these like blanket statements, I guess, which is like, they are true. Like, people need to get educated. But one of the things you mentioned, Lonnie, is like having a mentor is important, like finding someone that knows how to navigate the backcountry, at least to some extent, and somebody you can take stuff from is probably really important right now for people.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, like, having like a teammate like Lonnie, who we both like communicate really well, so we can like communicate about the snow safety and how we feel in situations and the different conditions and stuff. And that's really nice to have like a teammate that you trust for like their knowledge and communication style when you're out there, not just someone you have fun with.
Completely. I would definitely consider that another barrier where those who are selective in who they choose to backcountry ski with, I mean, it really limits how often or who you can get out with. But even having someone with similar risk tolerance and fitness, and like, there's just so many variables that go into finding a good compatible partner in the backcountry.
Do you guys have any recommendations? I mean, obviously it's even more complicated now with COVID, but how can people find a group of people to go and learn from? Like that's one of the hardest barriers to entry, I think, to overcome for people is like, how do I go and meet a new person that does this thing? Was there anything like beyond competing that helped you guys find like others that like would learn this kind of thing or that would be able to teach you this kind of thing?
Maybe through like your Avi 1 class or Avi 2 class, whatever level you are, you could then meet similar right. people. And obviously they're not going to be a mentor to you, but I feel like that could be the start to like meet other people that are similar level and enthusiastic and motivated to get out there. Do you have any ideas, Lonnie?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what kicked it off for me. As soon as I entered the sport, I immediately took my level one, which I know a lot of people will hold off and get more experience in the backcountry before they get their level one or two or whatever route they go. And I was also interested in guiding at that point. So I had reached out to the guide operation, Sawtooth Mountain Guides, and was fortunate that they were willing to kind of bring me on under their wing. Mm. And so immediately I had these professional mentors. But outside of that, hiring a guide is another great way to both glean that information and, you know, get more exposure and more experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that definitely is one of the things that people need to figure out too. And a lot of people just need to take their Avi 1, right? Like that's kind of the first step for getting into the backcountry for a lot of people, other than like going and getting the gear. And like step one, obviously, is showing interest and actually wanting to go out there for more than just like, because it's the cool thing to do. And then like Avi 1, I guess, is the next step. So I guess you'd probably pick up some of that stuff from there. So the reason we're here, you guys just did a video or a short film with Solomon TV called The Whirl. Explain to people what The Whirl is, what you guys did, and kind of like sum up the video a little bit for people.
Yeah, so The Whirl, which is spelled W-U-R-L, stands for this running route slash climbing route in the Wasatch, the Wasatch Ultimate Ridge Link Up. And it basically links the canyon or the ridge that goes around that horseshoes Little Cottonwood Canyon. So you start on one side, start sort of in the city, go up over 6,000 feet to the top of Twin Peak, and then you're on the ridge. And from there, you stay on the ridge all the way up and around the resorts, Alta and Snowbird at the top, and then come back down to complete the horseshoe, finishing at Lone Peak as your last summit. And then down to 6,000 feet or so. So this has become an increasingly popular route in the summer here in the Wasatch, and I think it is growing as well in the ultra running community. There's this little website by Jared Campbell where he sort of was the one that like named the route and made it popular. I've heard from locals that people have been sort of doing this, just not as publicized. So it's been a big thing in the running world. And I've been, as an ultra runner and lover of running and exploring the mountains, I've been pretty interested in it in the summer. And so it was just sort of natural that my interest for it molded into the winter and questioning like, well, can we just ski it in the winter? So that's originally where the idea came from. And then I think through that idea, Lonnie and I then developed into doing it the way we did it, which was we decided to move slower through it. So doing it in 4 days and three nights with stashed winter camps so that we could ski more in between, because along the ridge, you've got like some of the best lines in Utah or the Wasatch are just like right off that ridge. So it's a great way to access all these great skiing lines. And so sort of just using the route as like maybe as inspiration, but not sticking to the route exactly. But so loosely following the ridge while skiing a bunch was really our main goal.
Got it. Why? Like, I know you said you were interested in like because you're skiers, like you thought like, okay, why could we do it? But like what? I feel like it's a little bit of a weird thing to just be like, I want to go do this in the cold. Like it seemed pretty brutal, right? Like, I mean, there's got to be a lot of challenges with something like that.
Yeah, totally. I guess. I don't know. Do you think, Lonnie? I was pretty excited about it.
Completely. To me, it's like, why not? You know,
yeah, exactly.
When Molly had this idea to see the world, and we had the freedom to turn it into whatever we wanted to do. And I think any time you have some sort of objective or goal like that, it's great because you get it. You put it on the calendar. You get a plan for it. You get to look forward to it, and then you go out and do it. And like, unless there are actual reasons to back off or to turn away from, you know, whatever end goal you have, you just deal. You deal with like the weather that you have, you deal with obstacles, you deal with whatever it is that comes your way, and you just get to be out. And so to me, it was this opportunity to get to go sleep out in the mountains and be out all day and all night. And granted, I was a little afraid of the winter camping and yes, the cold and those variables, but yeah, there's too many answers to why we wanted to do it or why I wanted to join Mally in the pursuit.
Yeah.
I think that speaks a lot to you guys as athletes, because like I'm listening to this, like that seems cold and it seems hard and like it seems like there's a lot of reasons to like maybe not do it. Like you could just do parts of it. You could ski those lines and not do the whole thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I respect the shit out of you guys for doing it, but it's very, it's not, I guess, what people would be like, I want to go do this right now, especially on skis, I think.
Well, and I think too, we have been so drawn to these faraway places and doing excursions, you know, all over the world right, around these big mountains. And so when Mally came up with this idea to do something in her own backyard, where for me it was easy to get to, you get to turn something into something so much bigger and like this true journey and experience without, granted, I love to travel, but without all the travel, it's just right there.
Yeah. Which, and then for me, it turned like my backyard and where I ski and where I've sort of developed my backcountry skiing skills and, into like learning and seeing even more of it, which was pretty cool. And like camping out there and going to bed with the sunset, which was something I'd never really experienced. So just intimately getting to know more of the places that we think we are familiar with.
Had either of you done any winter camping before, like at all?
Yeah, I camped in the Tetons, which are like freezing. So the Wasatch, I was like, oh, it'll be so much warmer. And Lonnie did some winter camping as well.
Yeah, I camped up in the Sawtooth. I was working as a tail guide and such a goober. Like, obviously your priority is keeping the clients warm and happy. And little did I know, you need to be able to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. And I just cared for others and completely froze. Yeah. Very discouraging experience, although I like being out. But I didn't know there was a way to be warm while being out sleeping.
Yeah, which we were warm, right, Lonnie? Like,
Yeah.
I think my favorite quote, before I went winter camping in the Tetons, I was like pretty nervous and asking a bunch of friends. And the photographer who actually came with us on this world trip, Adam Clark, I talked to him before going winter camping in the Tetons. And his advice to me was that the first day you'll feel cold, and then after that you just get used to it and you don't feel cold anymore. And like the Tetons, I think we woke up on morning 4 and it had gotten to like negative 18, or it was negative 18 that morning. And like, he's so right. Like, I just didn't feel it. Like, and I know that sounds like, I remember hearing that from Adam and being like, you are so wrong. Like, I'm going to be cold the whole time. You're crazy. But I think that's really how winter camping goes. Like, I think for the world, like, there's probably a few moments of being a little cold, but not really. That was definitely not the concern or issue ever.
We also went big and had negative 20 degree sleeping bag.
Yeah. Well, I like to be warm when I sleep. Which he's got to stash anyway, so.
Yeah. What did you guys have for obstacles doing this? Like, I know, Mally, you were sick, right? Like, what was going on with that stuff? And what were, in addition to that, like, what were your nerves like when you were about to go do this? Or were there no nerves and you guys were just like, this is going to be fine? Like, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, I was sick. That was, like, the worst timed cold of all time. I did not have COVID. This is, like, pre-COVID.
Right.
And so that was really unfortunate. And that was honestly the biggest worry for me, is just how much I was going to suffer, which I really did suffer. But it was really nice to have Lonnie. I think, like, were we nervous of anything, Lonnie?
I mean, in the earlier stages, I was definitely apprehensive of just the route finding and navigating such new terrain for me. But once we went on that big scouting trip and I was able to get eyes on more of it and we were able to get out together, that really eased my nerves. And then going into it, yeah, I think it was mostly just excitement to finally get to do it again, knowing that it was one giant process. So
right.
I don't know, it's hard to feel nervous when you're just out there and taking it day by day and line by line and really
and knowing we could communicate through anything. So we had a lot of different ideas for like where we wanted to ski dependent on conditions. So we were never like locked into one situation.
So the planning part was pretty important, right?
Oh, super important. But then going back to nerves, I was nervous about having a camera around. I had never done a film trip like that.
Okay.
And so I also wasn't sure how that would be. And as it turns out, I'm terrible with a GoPro and basically did not GoPro any of my skiing and would turn the thing on when I wasn't supposed to have it on. And so I didn't really nail that. And I was definitely nervous about those components. But we got through.
We got better at it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's bizarre to think about, like, okay, we're gonna do this really difficult thing and then like we also have to make sure that like it's documented correctly. Like, let's just add another component to an already difficult thing.
Yeah, and I think it's like not in Lonnie and I's not naturally to like GoPro or document what's going on while we're like talking through situations. So that became like the videographer was always like, ladies, turn on your GoPros. Ladies, GoPro diary, which is like not natural for us.
Yeah, luckily we could turn it into a joke. It was great.
Yeah, I think we did just get more used to it.
Yeah, that's interesting though that you guys are not professional vloggers. So like this is not a thing that's that no. came super naturally. Okay, good. So when I was watching the video, my biggest concern was when you guys started stashing gear. Was that a worry for you at all? Like that maybe you were going to go there and your stuff wasn't going to be there or you weren't going to be able to find the point where it was like that. I like felt like you guys were setting up like kind of not a horror movie, but like kind of this situation where like, here's the thing. We went there and there was no gear there. Like
that is such a good question. Yeah. The amount of faffing that went into that preparation was like, oh my gosh, days and days. And the amount of worry, like, oh my gosh, what if we forget a tent or, you know, some critical piece of of gear, which this was not explained in the video, a little behind the scenes on three, when Mally and I are in our like suffocation chamber of a tent that just sealed right up, the videographer and the cameraman, Alex, and Anthony. Oh my goodness. I had accidentally packed a summer tent for them instead of one of our winter tents. So the two of them are getting like maximum airflow and just like freezing while Mally and I are literally suffocating.
Yeah.
So I did kind of blow it. So yes, stashing, a matter of having the right stuff and whether it'd be there was kind of a concern.
Yeah, it was just a lot of gear shuffle because we had enough gear for three different nights.
Right. So.
In the process of packing our things, a summer tent got thrown into that pile. And Lonnie also got a little nervous finding that third camp. Oh, yeah.
Did you really?
We found it. Yeah. That's in the video for a second, but.
Yeah. How did you guys find the stuff? Like, I mean, I'm sure there's got to be some system for it, right? But like stuff doesn't always look the same, especially if you're packing stuff in there like a few days before, like who knows what's going to change, right? Like, or somebody comes by and is just like, let me pull this pin flag off or, you know, I don't know how you guys are marking it, but.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some pink ties and then, I don't know. I just
marked it on our Gaia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. That makes sense. I kind of figured there was something like that, but like I saw the pink ties in the video and I was like, that's how the only way that they're marking it? Like I'm going to lose my shit because like there's no like how? Like you can't trust that cuz if I like yeah, anyway. That's what my main just so like you guys know, I was concerned. Line. Yeah, I was concerned for you guys while I was watching the video and I'm sure other people were as well.
Well, and like marmots or something getting into our food was a concern.
I guess
that would
really
suck.
Yeah. How's the feedback been on it? Like, I mean, I thought it was excellent, but like, how have other people, like, have people reached out to you and been like, oh, this is really cool. I want to do it. Like, what have you heard from people and what's been the most interesting feedback you guys have heard so far? Mm. Or are you just like not reading any of it or not listening to any of it? You're just like, because it's got a lot of view, like I think it's got like what 50,000 views or something on Solomon's YouTube or something like that. So like it's got a lot.
Whoa, I didn't know
that. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I did read some of the comments in the beginning. It seems like we're getting like people have reached out. I don't really know how to answer that question. I know. One thing that I was a little like wanted to clarify was like, it just got written somewhere wrong, even though I had clarified it in my pitch and talked about it. And we even interviewed Jared in the film. But three men from Utah did go, they're like ski mountaineers. So they did go and try to complete the whirl, in one push.
Right.
And they actually weren't able to ski alone. Same with us. And so like, while we did it slower, there's just sort of, I think we're not the first people to go try to do the whirl in the winter.
Right.
Which is one of
I thought you guys made that pretty clear.
Thank you. Okay, good.
I mean, it said it like in the beginning, like of the, like it literally says it right in the beginning, I think. Right. And I think it's even written out. Is it, okay. Or am I making that up? I don't know.
I don't know.
Have you guys watched this? Like, have you guys watched your own, video, like the and that's the other thing I wanted to ask too. Is that part weird for you?
Read any?
What, Lonnie?
Oh yeah, it's so embarrassing for me to.
Lonnie's embarrassed by all of her giggling, which I think is so like makes me laugh every time. I like it.
And that's it. That's it. That's funny. It seemed like a pretty big push. What's that?
Sounds like Lonnie's in and out.
Is she cutting in and out? Is that what's going on right now?
It must be, huh?
Yeah, it's got to be.
Oh, sorry.
You get like half a sentence in and then like it dies out.
Okay, I'll walk somewhere else.
No, you're good. That was good. I mean, it's been fine until that point.
Weird. Okay, sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Okay.
So what did you guys like about it? What did you guys not like about it? Was there anything you wish that you could have done differently when you were putting this whole thing together?
Well, I would have really enjoyed being healthy. mostly out of like, I just love being out there and I just didn't get to spend those 4 days like chatting and enjoying Lonnie's partnership as well as the videographer and the photographer with us. Like, I didn't get to be myself out there and be as as much of a team player either, which I was so lucky that Lonnie is just so competent and could like lead for me, like set the skin track almost every single day and do everything. So I wish I could have contributed more. And obviously we wish we would have been able to ski alone, but it was a pretty easy decision with the weather. And then other than that, I think that there's not really any regrets or anything, because we like tried our best on those days, and that's, and we were safe and communicated, and that's all we can really, at least those are my goals. Obviously learned about the tent as well, so learned some things. And...
what is your guys' plan for the season? I mean, obviously, like, I hate having to talk about COVID like every episode basically, but like, we're talking to different people, like, what is your season this season gonna look like now? Because obviously, like, traveling's a little more difficult. Like, seems like this year might have been a good year to do something close to home.
I know, right?
But like, what's the plan? Do you guys have anything set in stone?
Well, together, Lonnie and I are going to a hut in Montana with a bunch of other ski ladies. Cool. In January. So basically just staying close or places that we can drive to. And then we're also planning a trip in Idaho in the spring, which, yeah, probably another ski traverse with winter camping with our same pink tent. We'll just open the vents this time.
I feel like we lost Lonnie here. Are you there?
Oh, no, I'm here.
Oh, you're good. Okay, cool. Because you, like, we can't hear, like, very much, and like, because your video thing's not on, like, we can't see like when you're moving and when you're not, so like, it doesn't, we have no idea if you're there or if you're just like,
I'm just still profusely sweating. So my video is not on.
No, that's fine. That part's totally fine. That's hilarious. But Lonnie had to run to this interview, so it, yeah, I'm sure maybe not the most ideal interview situation, but is what it is. So, all right. Any last things, guys, like, that you guys want to talk about Whirl specifically? It's available on Solomon's YouTube, right?
Yes.
Cool. Anything else you guys have going on that you want to plug or talk about? In the immediate future, I guess. Because obviously, like, if you do another thing like this, we can do this again. But like, or we can do it again for no reason too. But like, I more mean, like, is there anything, like, where can people find you guys online? Like, where can people find you on Instagram? The whole deal.
Yeah. Well, I did write a story about our trip in the Ski Journal, so that should be coming out when the next issue of Ski Journal comes out. Cool. With some great photos by Adam Clark, to get a little bit more of the perspective from my side. We did an interview with Backcountry Mag as well, so that's up online. And yeah, I think that's about it. Anything else, Lonnie?
No, I'm pretty much not a huge online presence, and I will be in Crested Ute skiing all winter and getting out there.
Yeah, I think we'll just, we're already like planning our next one, which is just how Lonnie and I are. We just like to plan and
just keep at it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for taking the time to do this. This has been great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam.
Yeah. Glad we made it work too.
That was our episode with Lonnie and Mally. They are awesome, as you can probably tell. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode. I know I enjoyed doing it. What's next? I don't know. Lorraine Huber is next, and she is on episode number whatever one is next, Thursday. We'll see you guys in 2 days. I hope you guys enjoy yourselves. Have a lovely week, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.